Hello.
Happy 4th of July, Paul.
Oh, I'm wearing. I could have been king of Rhode Island. I've told you that before, I'm pretty sure.
No, you haven't.
If we hadn't lost, I'm pretty sure I would have been somewhere around there by the time this decade got going
It's
with my
really
lineage to the crown.
well, sure, the king of Rhode Island. I like that. That's pretty good. Well, Paul, it's kind of you guys' own damn fault. You wore a red coat. You made it easy to see you.
We did, yes.
You made
Note
great
to self.
targets.
Note to self, not red coat next time.
Next time, no red coats. So you've got you're all ready to celebrate. You got your three sparklers, two snakes, and a buzz bomb.
That's right.
Good.
Yeah. We like
Good.
we went with sparklers early last night. It was great.
Oh, nice.
Now,
Nice.
now the sparklers are like safety sparklers or something.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, can't you just have a regular sparkler? But now they've got like coverings and everything, and now it's hard to light a sparkler, which is ridiculous.
I know. I
Yeah,
know. You can only light a sparkler with another sparkler.
Well, actually, I was using a blowtorch to light the sparklers last. Not sure that's really making the safety strides they were trying to reach with that kind of setup.
Hi,
But
my name's Alan McNish, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
I'm David Hobbs, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Matchett, and you're listening to FormulaOneBlog.com.
You're listening to the audio journal of F1 Opinion, FormulaOneBlog.com podcast.
Thank you for joining me at FormulaOneBlog.com for podcast number 481, the Austrian Grand Prix Review. This is Todd.
No, Todd, not now.
AKA Negative Cameron, tonight for your kind consideration. The Austrian Grand Prix Review. That's what we do after a race. Paul and I get together and chat about it. And we will talk about that last lap collision. I mean, how many times do we have championship leaders colliding on the last lap for a win? It hasn't happened that often. But before covering the race, I have to bring in my guest tonight, which of course means that's right, I gotta go all the way to the left coast of America, nestled in the rolling hills of Sonoma, where he plies his skills as a professional driver, instructor, and driving program logistics manager and all-round beer crafter. That's right, he's an IPA fiend. You know him as the International. I'm on a first-name basis with him. I call him Paul Charsley. How you doing tonight, Paul?
I'm doing good. Yes, I've been out in the woods a lot recently this
I
week.
Noticed
So,
that. I
yeah.
noticed you were out in the woods. You were doing your best Bear Grylls out there, weren't you?
I was,
you
yes.
know? You're out
Luckily,
there with your
I didn't have
son
to drink
and
my own urine, so that was a plus.
you're out there with your son showing him, the how to survive on eating tree bark and moss,
How to make beer out of it, more cool.
Wonder if this moss would make a good IPA. Oh, that's a good idea.
Well,
in the middle of all of this outdoors activity, I'm assuming you got to see the race and.
Yes. I rushed back. Still, leaves in my hair to watch all the shenanigans that went on this weekend. There's a lot of racing going on actually this weekend.
Yeah,
obviously, one was eventful unto itself. But
well,
yes.
You were torn. Battersea Formula E or Formula One? I know.
Yes, very torn.
It's
over already. I didn't even blink, and the Formula E is another season's gone by.
Has it?
Yeah. Can you believe it?
You're sitting there. Yeah.
The crowd are so disappointed. Now we've got to wait a whole, I don't know when the season starts again, before it starts again. So.
I don't know, but I know there were some folks in Battersea just not that jazzed about having the race down there.
No, I guess he's not coming back there, so there you go.
Yeah, so, you know, you can float a big inflatable pig from the power station, but you can't hold a race there. So
yeah, first you have the Brexit, and now you got the exit. Or whatever you want to call it. I didn't really think that one through, did I? No. But anyway. No.
But I, you know, I'm there with you. You know, I think, you know, I think I understand what you're trying to say, man.
Thank you.
So, Paul, there was a race in Austria, the Red Bull Ring. It's difficult not to call it the A1 Ring, but there you have it. It is the third shortest track on the circuit, on the calendar, anyway, I should say. Just what,
the
two and a half?
Third shortest.
Yeah.
What's the second shortest? Obviously, Monaco is the shortest, right?
Is it Hungary?
Is it really?
I don't know.
Hungary shorter? I wouldn't imagine it was. Huh.
Yeah. I don't know.
Weird.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know,
no.
Man. I just read the stats, man. I don't know anything.
I know, no. I would have thought this would absolutely be the second shortest, so I can't even imagine what is the shortest, but we'll see.
Yeah, third shortest. Recently paved. It's interesting, Paul. They recently paved the repaved the Red Bull Ring, and the tarmac was incredibly grippy for a new paving. And what we did see over the qualifying weekend and race weekend, but more so on Friday and Saturday with the rain, is how fast that track dried out with the weather conditions and stuff. It was really impressive, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's something they've formulated into the asphalt. It's definitely things tracks are now looking at as well, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, we went from one extreme to the other. Remember where it was? Korea, when they put laid down that tarmac that cured really quickly, but it was actually a skating rink.
Yes.
As things evolve, I think they repave these things. They really think about drainage and everything, because that's really, you know, a track being wet is not an issue, but track being puddly and, you know, inconsistent is. But actually getting a track to dry out that quick is kind of nuts. And I wonder if it's something to do with how the asphalt is cured in there. But that certainly helps these guys. But and everyone was surprised, right?
Yeah, no, they were. Everybody was. And any of you road wonks over in the UK that, you know, you're really into bitumen, you know, let us know, man. You
know, yeah.
I don't know how that happened.
I'll put it in my driveway so I can get out easily.
Right.
I get a good launch in the rain.
That's
to beat
right.
My neighbor to the corner. Yeah.
That's right. You know, it's raining, but I'm going to go with the intermediates on this one. I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to go with the ultra softs. I think it's ready. I think I got a dry line in the pavement.
Yeah,
in the driveway.
You know, my daughter always she's on the right rear and she's always slow. So maybe I should avoid the pit stall altogether.
Yeah. Right, right. Oh boy, let's talk about a little qualifying, shall we, for the Austrian Grand Prix? And it has not. It didn't go unnoticed. I love this race. I love the whole Austrianness of it all, and the Dirndls and the Lederhosen, and it was great fun. And I don't know if it was great fun actually seeing Christian Horner in Lederhosen, but still.
I think those suits were really ridiculous.
Yeah, those.
If there was only a fashionable this week, I think. That would be, you better hang that over till next week.
Peter. I know. That's Grace is going to go for the fashion award with Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen and their Lederhosen and Nomex suits. Yeah.
Got to be. That's
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I found that, loved it and loved the race. And, you know, there's only nine turns on this track, Paul. This is a fast track, average speed over 140 miles an hour. And medium and high speed turns, and that's kind of the appeal you talked about on your track talk about, you know, because of how fast this is and how few turns it is, you know, if you aren't there or thereabouts, you can get hung out pretty quick at this track.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not much of a compromise track for sure. So if you've, you know, everyone's kind of going the same direction, if you're off just that little bit, you're off a lot because all those corners are going to add up very quickly. And it's critical to be in the hunt, else you're, you know, just sitting back and hurting. And we saw some of the teams You know, even if they had some speed, they just didn't get their head around the tires in the race, and they went off so quickly. And that's what I kind of mean is that, you know, if it goes off, it goes off in a big way.
Yeah, it was a tough weekend because Friday was a lot of these changing conditions. It was wet, qualifying the same thing. And then they had the warm periods where the sun was out and the track, the tarmac was quite a bit hotter than it actually was come race day. And it really kind of, I think it was a tactically, how do you set these cars up? I think it was a challenge, you know, they were gambling, or we're going to be wet, or we're going to be cold, or, you know, and then we had tire graining issues and a lot of things came into play this weekend that, you know, to be a fly on a wall and some of the strategy up and down the paddock, it would have been interesting to see how these teams were trying to manage this weekend, the entirety of the weekend, and how do we set these cars up and how do we, what are we going to anticipate for? Made it tough. The qualifying was a bit of a damp affair and had changeable conditions that really did highlight how quick the circuit dries out. And Vettel had a penalty for what did he change? He changed a gearbox, was it?
Gearbox, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Vettel's penalty, Paul, was assessed prior to Nico's penalty. Nico had a crash in free practice 3, and I guess this is as good a point any, Paul, to bring up these curbs. You have the normal rumble strips that we're used to seeing, the red and white, then you have these negative curbs after that, and then you get out to these baguettes or sausage curves, these baguette curves, which are, you know, like cadavers laying there, and so the fact is that four different teams had suspension failures, Paul, and there's two thoughts on this, and I want to get your perspective from a professional driver's perspective. For the layman in armchair quarterbacking this sucker at home, you can say, well, stay off the damn curbs, treat it as a wall, and I think I get that point, but I think that's a lot easier said than done, is it not?
I mean, if you have some kind of, I mean, as some of the guys said, well, better put a wall there, you know, and that's fine and dandy, but I'd rather not have the walls there, you know, just for safety concerns. I think we're nearly there with what they're attempting here. I think maybe it was just a little violent, you know, we've talked about runoff areas and everything, you know, they're too prevalent nowadays where guys just, if they overcook it, they just go straight on. They don't barely lose any time. They just, you know, have to readjust or whatever. But this was a bit more critical on being accurate and precise. And is it hard to be precise? I mean, yeah, it's hard to be precise. But should these guys be precise? Yeah. I mean, you give us an inch and we'll take a mile, right? You give us anything, and we'll use it all the way up to that next limit. Really, it's. I think just the visuals were such that it was harder for the drivers to get in their heads that was the limit because it looks so inviting, right? You've just got this whole expanse of asphalt and there's just these little yellow things. But once you whacked them, you realize, you know, how violent that was on the cars. Right. And, you know, just shook the cars. I mean, you saw those slow-mo shots.
Of Kvyat, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, you just see how the vibration and the oscillation just rips that car apart. So I think the thought process is fantastic. I think maybe it was just a bit extreme. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they you could still go to the outside of them if you really bailed out quick. So, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't. I'm not too much against it, really.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the fastest way around the circuit is to take a bit of curb. And if you're going to take a bit of curb, sure, then you're going to overcook it a few times. And if you overcook it onto those negative curbs, then that oscillation and vibration, I don't know, maybe they need to think of it as spacing the depth or something. But, you know, so we aren't. I mean, so it's preventative. And like you, I don't know if it was Max Verstappen. What I'm said, I don't know what was wrong with the AstroTurf because clearly that's a negative impact you get on that stuff. And
well, yeah,
you know,
because
it does slow you down.
But it kept ripping up. And,
right.
You know,
that
just looks ridiculous.
Right. You know? Yeah. It gets all ripped up. I remember a few years ago when Lewis Hamilton had a big chunk of AstroTurf stuck under his car, you know. Not good either.
No, but I think they're close to what should happen, maybe at all the tracks, but maybe it's just a little extreme. But I like the thought process behind it, where it's just like, you know, and Did we see anyone hit them this in the race?
No, come race day, they were pretty, you know, they were pretty ginger around those things. And maybe to this, maybe to your point, I'm just trying to put a period on this, is that you're thinking, look, yeah, they are aggressive, and maybe a couple of them are a little too aggressive. However, the pure and simple fact is that this is a difference in the right direction, mm-hmm. and it's just going to take time to correct the behavior of drivers. You're just going to have to eventually realize that you can't, it looks inviting, but it's not. And they're going to have to get their head around that.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, you know, there's, when you're driving at tracks, I mean, there's points on the track where you say, okay, if I go off here, I'm crashing, right? You know, and it might not even be even a curb. It might be just, there's a big drop off on the exit, you know, where the track hasn't been maintained enough, or, you know, and you say, hey, if I drop a wheel here, it's going to hook me into the wall. And you know what you do? You don't go off there. And if you do go off there, then you crash and it's, hey, that's my bad. So that's why I'm not, you know, you can't, these guys are, everything's kind of, the safety thing is one thing, but the good thing is that this doesn't involve injuring somebody if they go off, right? It's not, we're not going to put a tree stump there, right? It has a negative effect on the car. As I said, it's a bit more extreme. I don't particularly want suspension pieces breaking. So then they careen into another wall. That's not really a safe option either, but it's definitely, as I said, a step in the right direction. But yeah, there's several points on any track that you say, if I drop a wheel here, I'm going to crash. So you just don't go there.
Yeah.
If I do this at this corner, I'm going to be crash. And that's the same thing they have to come up across. Like, if I drop my wheel too far over to the right, I'm going to hit those yellow curbs and I'm going to crash. So don't go there. So I don't have a lot of sympathies, you know, that they needed to take them off. I think it was good for the FIA to stand their ground there a little bit. I think initially I was a bit more inclined with the drivers a little bit, where it's, well, that's ridiculous. You just hit a little curb. But then you see that this is actually the third curb option, right?
Yeah,
you
right.
Got one first curb, then you got negative curb, then you got this. Like, okay, you're that far out there. You made a big mistake. Just don't go there. So
yeah, I wasn't sure if we were going to see Sunday morning, you know, if Charlie was going to tell Herbie Blass, you know, get a Dremel and get your ass out there and start grinding him down, Herbie.
Yeah,
you know, but that didn't happen. You know,
no, they
said, you know, man, whatever.
It's like Abu Dhabi and stuff. Like, I'd like to see that stuff pop up there too.
Yeah. Now, one of the issues is, and Nico said, look, I wasn't on the baguette curbs. I was on the negative curbs, and whatever reason, it created this resonance across this pole stress across suspension, and that resonance, and it just shattered it. He damaged his gearbox. He had to make that gearbox change, and therefore he got a penalty like Vettel. But because his penalty was assessed after Vettel's, he ends up only taking a fourth place as they shuffle the grid around. And that's where he ended up. Now, Rosberg ended up starting,
sixth,
right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Vettel was down to ninth. That's how it
did
was.
He not hit those yellow curbs? I swear he did.
He said he didn't.
He hit them just a little bit, but memory. I didn't see it just coming from the negative curb. But
Kvyat certainly did.
But Nico has a habit of misremembering things.
It was my corner.
For his own convenience, yes.
I predict the line, which today is going to be completely through the runoff. That's the safest way and fastest way around this corner. So anyway, Lewis took pole position. Now, this were really early decisions on dry tires really gave some of the drivers three, possibly four laps to make a run. Lewis didn't get his pole on his penultimate lap. He backed off because Ricardo was in the mix. And it was one of those timing issues. The track was drying so quickly in the very, very last, you know, waning minutes of Q3 that it was whoever, you know, switched to the dries earliest, got their, you know, two laps and three laps in, that was going to be the fastest guy. Lewis ends up on pole position with Nico Hülkenberg in second, and Jenson Button ends up in third. You know, Paul, I'll get to Pascal, because Pascal made it to Q2, ends up in 12th, which is a terrific on merit performance by Manor and a great job by Pascal. But I did want to talk just quickly about these changing conditions. And when we always talk about wet races, there are drivers that come to mind who are really good in the wet. You know, I always think of Sebastian, who's good in the wet. I think Lewis is good in the wet. There's those guys that wet. But whenever we think about changing conditions, the guy that jumps to mind to me is Jenson Button. Every time it's not, you know, just full wet race, that's one thing. But changing conditions, JB just really seems to excel in those conditions. You think of Canada a few years ago where he passed Vettel for the win, you know. Mm-hmm. He's just really good at this, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it's he doesn't get it right every time, but if you were going to lay a bet, you'd lay it on Jensen, right? And it's a mind game, you know. You got to figure out what to do and when to do it. And one of the things that Jensen did was back off and take the risk, just like Lewis did, actually. They both kind of did the same thing, was to not shag their tires out on that first lap, and they saved them so they would have the good set of tires underneath them for that very last lap where the track was the driest, whereas everyone else was going out there and just, you know, just putting down their lap. So
yeah,
a lot of mine, you know, it was a risk, but an educated risk that they both took, and they both reaped those rewards. And that's absolutely part of having experience, but also just having the brain capacity to actually think of these things in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was a great qualifying. You had Lewis, then Nico Hülkenberg, Jenson Button in third, Kimi Raikkonen fourth, Ricciardo fifth, Rosberg sixth, Valtteri Bottas seventh, Max Verstappen, the plucky teen, in eighth. Ninth was Vettel, and then tenth, finally, Felipe Massa. That was your top ten. Paul, though, we've got to talk about Pascal Wehrlein. It was a great qualifying session for him, and he ends up in 12th. It was on merit, and this weekend, that Mercedes lump really coming to the fore in the back of that Manor.
Yeah, no, and I don't think it's just the Mercedes. I mean, after, you know, hearing some of the interviews on Pascal, it let us in the window there a little bit of what the Manor issues were, which is, you know, getting the right temperature and heat into the tire and being able to use it to its maximum ability. And they seem to have turned a corner on that. And he said that was really has been a key to transforming the car into a runner. And that bodes really well, I think. You know, if it was just about getting your head around the tires, and that's what kind of switched this car on, maybe they can continue on that vein and just be more competitive for the rest of the season. They've had, you know, a pretty good, the best season they've had so far ever, right? In being competitive, and Pascal's been the man to do it in the races. Admittedly, Rio Haryento has had some decent qualifying, which is kind of a surprise, where he can kind of hang or even beat Wehrlein. But in the races, it's a whole different story. But this time, Pascal he was on it all weekend. I mean, he's really showing his talent. And the Mercedes guys, I'm sure, after this race, are like, you know, that Nico contract, do we really want this headache? You know, I'm not sure. But Pascal's and great for the Manor team. It is a shame that the guys that started the team aren't still involved, because they'd be very, very much enjoying this scenario at this point.
Yeah.
But the new Manor is great. You know, it's still a small team. It's still a team you want to cheer on. And wow, you know, talk about, you know, Phoenix from the fire, and then finally Wehrlein right in there, the mix of it, right? You know, between the Williams and the McLarens and the Toro Rosso's, just mighty, mighty impressive. And I just hope they can, that this occurrence with being able to actually use the tires to their maximum is something they can carry through the whole season, because I'd love to see that.
Right. And you talk about it, he's a Mercedes junior driver, and which led Toto Wolff to say, he actually said, no, he's very special. I mean, it just proves this weekend just how special Pascal Wehrlein
is. And then you know, he's not there just to be, you know, a third run. He's a future driver for the Mercedes team. So, you know, if he can prove that, you know, he can really fight it up, you never know what can happen
sooner than
later. Because if, you know, Rosberg signs a 2-year contract, or they really want Wehrlein to spend 2 years out in the boot. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah, it could come into play. But that was your top 10 in qualifying. Anything else out of qualifying you want to talk about before we really move to the race, Paul?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Let's talk about the race then. There was a threat of rain on Sunday morning or afternoon, but it really never materialized, and it remained effectively a dry race. I think there was a couple moments where there was a raindrop or two, but it was effectively a dry race. Markedly cooler, though. So the track temperature a lot cooler than other times that they had had over the weekend. We talked about the curb issues with the teams breaking their suspensions on Friday and Saturday, which effectively just meant staying off of the curbs. And the teams actually and the drivers seemed to do that come race day. They, you know, were giving them a lot more quarter as they were racing. And it was a cool day. The tire temps weren't very high. This led to some graining. But ultimately, the race won by Lewis Hamilton, Mercedes. You had Lewis in P1, Nico Rosberg in P2. Nico started sixth, but was able to undercut Lewis and claim the lead for much of the race. He had an incredible first stint, a great first stint. And it was interesting tactically because the team and Lewis Hamilton were marking Sebastian Vettel, as they should. You know, Ferrari came in with a new upgrade. You know, Mercedes wants to make sure that's cool temperatures, this whole tire pressure issue where, you know, Mercedes may have had some trickery on tire pressures, and the FIA clamped down on that this weekend. So Mercedes being very prudent, marking Sebastian Vettel. They were covering. That's what Lewis's tactics were. He was on a different strategy than Nico. Nico on a two-stopper originally and made hay with that first stint and really, you know, did a yeoman's job. And he loves the circuit. He's won twice here. Lewis Paul said that this circuit's tough for him because he's that, you know, he goes in aggressive, late break, and then and it doesn't really serve. This circuit doesn't flatter that driving style. So for Lewis, this is a tough circuit. He has to change his driving style, and I got to imagine, Paul, that's pretty damn tough to do.
Yeah, it's definitely what you would expect of the differing driver styles. Lewis attacks corners, you know, he breaks as late as he possibly can. I think he's locked up more inside front tires than anyone in any season. You know, he gets away with it because he minimizes it, but he's definitely always right there on that limit. And Nico is definitely a more methodical driver. I mean, maybe I hate to say the naturally talented Lewis Hamilton versus, you know, but they're just different, right? They do it in a different way. And definitely the faster the corner, the more there is finesse. If it's, you know, a mixture of corners where you can really attack slow corners under the braking, get the car, you know, change direction quickly and power out, you know, that's Lewis Hamilton right there.
Right.
But the faster a corner, you have to be very delicate with the steering wheel, very delicate with how you release the brake. It's all, you know, it's all about keeping that corner speed up in the middle. And if you unbalance the car by being too aggressive with the brake gas or the steering, it's a negative to corner speed and lap time, and that's something that Lewis has to peg back just that little bit in order to get around the track fast, and that's something that would be naturally in the zone of Nico Rosberg.
Right.
So that's kudos to Lewis. You know, obviously Nico had some issues over the weekend that kind of didn't allow him to really show that in the qualifying, but we saw in the race that he really does enjoy driving this track, because it was a very, very impressive drive by Nico up until later in the race. I mean, he did everything you could possibly want from a driver, considering where he had to start the race. I mean, he was just phenomenal first stint.
That first stint was awesome. Yeah, it really was, because they weren't planning on him coming up and undercutting. But then again, like I said, the team were marking Sebastian with Lewis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lewis, even when Nico undercut Lewis, Lewis is still in the pocket to cover Seb. But when Seb DNF'd, they had to tack Lewis's entire strategy. Now, this is where Lewis did a hell of a job in the second half of this race and the team tactically to say, okay, look, Seb's out. Now I've got Nico undercut. Nico's leading. We got to get on top of this. And Lewis has to get on top of this. Lewis delivered in spades. And then in order to cover Nico, and Lewis even lost 3 seconds in slower pit stops to Nico and still managed to win the race. It was a great result, 46th win for Lewis, and he closed the points down at Delta because of Nico's debacle. He closed the points Delta down to 11, which could have ballooned over 30 points had Nico not done what he did at the last lap, turn two. But suffice it to say, there was some talk made about Lewis pitting the second time for the softs while Nico was on super soft. But, you know, for those of you who haven't read this, I mean, that was the right call. The softs were by far, for the Mercedes, the better tire, because Nico, he was faster initially on the super softs, but then they grained and he had issues, and Mercedes knew that wasn't the tire. But Nico didn't have another set of softs to put him on. Lewis did. Interestingly, both drivers had a brand new set of ultra softs, and they didn't choose those either because those are only 10 lap type of tires. So they did what they had to do here, and as it turns out, it was the right call. Now, Lewis radioed the team. He questioned that, but he didn't know at that time that he was on the right tire, and Nico technically wasn't. And you could see that. Lewis reeled him in, did a great job of getting around the traffic, and put himself in a position to win. Let's talk about the collision. Nico took most of the corner and effectively didn't leave any room, Paul. It's like he went in, he didn't turn. He was never going to turn at the normal place you would turn to hit the apex. That was never going to happen because he knew Lewis was on the outside. So people say, look, he didn't take the apex. Well, of course he's not going to take the apex. There's no way in hell he'd do that. He was always going to make it wide. But he made it incredibly. He absolutely left no room. It's like he went through the back of that corner, and once he got up to the white line of the back of the corner, then he put in a lot of opposite lock to make that turn. Whether his long brake pedal, which his brakes were in passive mode at this point, which is sort of a safety get the car home mode, his brake by wire electric portion of it had gone, and maybe that contributed. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but the fact is he didn't leave any room for Lewis Hamilton turning in on, and Lewis, for his part, ultimately he came in, he was on the outside, he was ahead on the outside, he stuck his left wheel to that white line, followed that white line around the profile, and turned into Nico. You could argue, well, there was a car there, he clearly could have went into the runoff area, but, that's not, Lewis isn't going to run into the runoff area either. The point is, in my perspective, it was a very clumsy defensive move by Nico that really left no room. While Lewis could have lifted and ran wide off track, that was never going to happen. He wasn't about to do that. The collision broke Nico's front wing, hitting Lewis's side pod. He ends up fourth. Lewis reclaimed the lead and won. The fact of the matter is, clearly Nico's fault. It was a very ham-fisted move. I feel like he could have made a late turn, but not taken all of the corner and squeeze Lewis out on under acceleration out of the apex, which is probably what Lewis would have done. And Lewis is really good at that. So to Lewis's credit, when we talk about Lewis punting and running Nico and roughing him up a little bit, running him wide, well, he does it, but it is that sort of squeezing him out under acceleration. And they may make contact, but it's wheel to wheel. So that's kind of how I see it. I don't think it was worthy of a penalty. I'm sorry. I just don't. I think it's a racing incident. And all of this call from Toto, team orders are back on the table. I think that's stupid because Mercedes is clearly, a country mile in the lead. And if you want to take the battling between these two guys out of Formula One, then I don't know what you're left with. So that's how I see it. Paul, you're a professional driver. I'm just saying this from an armchair, but how did you see it?
Well, I think the thought, I think Nico's got a history of when he tries to drive aggressively like this, he doesn't do it very well.
And it's,
I
think, execution, this, yeah.
And this is exactly what happened again. We saw it at Spa, right? Was that where he half put his nose in and
2 years ago, yeah,
got it knocked off. This is what Lewis did, was exactly what I've been asking Rosberg to do. When Lewis tries these maneuvers on him, you got to race hard, and you got to be willing. I know there's a lot of controversy about contact and everything, but you got to be willing to risk that to win the championship at this point between the two.
Yeah.
So usually it's on the other foot. You know, Lewis is usually the one that's being aggressive and hard on in the corner to fight for it. And usually Nico is the one that just kind of gives up at that point for the to make sure that he continues on in the race. Lewis knows exactly what he's doing. Obviously, he's been on the other side many, many times. He knew passing Rosberg on the outside was not – Rosberg was not going to just kind of turn into the apex and keep going. And so he did give a probably more room than I expected Lewis to give him, quite honestly, before he turned in. But Nico turned in reaction to Lewis's change of direction, and that was extremely late. And Rosberg had to turn the wheel so quickly and so hard, there was no way those front tires were going to bite at that point, especially seeing as they're offline, which ultimately made the front end kind of slide out and run into the side pod there. If the right thing to do for Nico would have been to, drive Lewis out there, leave him out there, and then get turned in. Yeah, don't turn in for the apex, but turn in sooner than he attempted to here. There was no way that was going to work.
Right.
Lewis was not going to drive all the way down and turn around and wave Nico through. He was going to at least use the road between the white lines as a justifier for when he turned, and that's exactly what he did. And Lewis knowing
intelligently, yep.
Yeah, and then Lewis knowing that if he turns in and Nico's right there, a nose is a lot more vulnerable than a side pod.
Right.
And, you know, all these things go through the driver's mind, I promise you. If Nico wants to stick his nose in there, then basically, you know, he's going to drive into my side pod, and that's going to be very detrimental to him as well. Ultimately, Nico should have turned a bit earlier, not in reaction to Lewis, but in reaction to the corner. So he still got a fairly decent exit and then continued. And that would have – Lewis would have been struggling, as we saw, even without contact, to not exit that corner on the other side of the curb. And then all Nico would have had to do, he would have got a better exit, and we would have been able to hold Lewis out there and basically get down to turn three ahead. But instead, as you said, a bit ham-fisted, a little clumsy, went too far by keeping the wheel straight, reacted to Lewis. And by that time, I said, it's just too late. And that's where the contact was made. I don't mind the mindset of what Nico was trying to do,
because
exactly what Lewis has done to him. But he just didn't execute it very well. I agree that it shouldn't really be a penalty, because they're fighting out for the last lap of the race. It just Nico made it look worse than it needed to be, and that's why the penalty ensued. So hopefully Nico. I mean, it's so sad because Nico did drive an incredible race up until that point.
Great race.
And struggling. But Lewis did a fantastic job getting out of turn one. And Nico struggling, unfortunately, with grained tires. As you stated, the tires weren't the optimum tire by the end of the stint. And Lewis had some advantages there. And Lewis had advantages under the braking as well.
Right.
But in reality, Nico really just needed to hold him up for one lap, you know.
And also, Paul, we talked about it before the podcast, and I want to bring this up, to the criticism that Lewis turned into to Nico. To be fair to Lewis, I really don't – you and I both talked about this. Neither of us felt like Lewis – I think Lewis knew he was going to run him wide.
Yes.
But I don't think Lewis – I think Lewis was just anticipating when Nico was going to start turning, and he just didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and he used that white line as justification very intelligently, but I think it caught Lewis a little off guard, to be frank with you. I think he thought that Nico would start turning before then. I really do.
Yeah, you would think if Nico was doing it to his best advantage, that's exactly what would have happened. And it's very easy to say, well, Lewis obviously saw him there, but literally you sit in these cars and, you know, they're up to the middle of your ear, the side of them.
Yeah, right.
The mirrors are so tiny, you can see glimpses of things, but you cannot see anything clearly at all. And when you're deep into that corner, you've got to turn that much a degree. Your head can barely turn that far. So I would absolutely say that Lewis would not have a clear vision of where exactly Nico was anyway. But, you know, he came to the point where he had to turn for the corner.
Right.
You know, maybe he could have turned just a minute, a couple of feet later, but not really. You know, the further out you go, the dirtier the track is going to be, and there's the lesser chance you have of getting power and traction coming out of the corner to fight for that position. So it's really, really tough to see out of those cars the way the safety is, where you're really sunk into them. So you drive by feel and anticipation,
instincts.
There you go. That's the right word. Yeah. Sometimes knowing where they were last time you saw them, where they should be, etc. But I'm not, and honestly, if Lewis knew exactly where he was, I wouldn't care either, because Lewis had to do what he had to do, and Nico should have done something a little bit different. And the contact was made, and Nico came out, you know, obviously the loser in that case.
Right, and that's pretty much how I see it too. And I feel like, to that point you brought up, being offline, it's dirty, it's dusty, there's marbles out there. I mean, had Nico not taken the normal apex, he's never going to do that, but had he made it late and tried to, you know, basically take a later apex, get Lewis out into the marbles and dust, and then squeeze him or hang him out on acceleration out of that apex, that prolonged apex, much more effective. Much more effective.
Lewis and would have had to have backed off of that.
He would have had to have. Right. Exactly right. And so in that case, yeah, it was just a ham-fisted move. That's how I see it, you know. You know, it is what it is. And that's what happened. So, you know, the penalty, he paid the penalty, you know. And I don't know. I'm a little foggy on this whole, a car's got a damaged wing that's dragging on the ground and you immediately have to park it now. What's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, especially on the last lap of a race.
Yeah,
I mean,
come on.
Yeah, that's silly. I mean, even that, was it Monaco or whatever, where that was Kimi that got the last one.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Now Nico did get a time penalty, right? 10 seconds?
10 seconds. Yeah,
avoidable.
Causing a collision was what I read.
Now, is that consistent? I was going to try and find that out. I did not, as to when this penalty ensued before. For some reason, I thought they were drive-through penalties in the past, because, you know, all you have to do is look back at Pastor Maldonado's races. Sure.
That's right.
a quick reference guide right there.
Yeah.
That was a lot. You know, it seemed like was it 5 seconds he got? I can't
tell
the penalty was 10. Obviously, it didn't affect his position in the race, but for some reason, I feel like the 10 seconds was a bit lenient as to what other penalties have been, but I could be completely wrong. I mean,
yeah,
maybe a drive-through is a 10-second penalty. I don't know. No, it's usually longer than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's longer than that, yeah.
I don't know. But obviously, he didn't lose a position, so it was a moot point.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. He ends up P4, you know, all things considered, everything that happened, you know, it was a damage limitation at that point. But he limped across, but not before Max Verstappen passed him and secured P2 for Red Bull. His teammate Daniel Ricciardo back in P5. Ricciardo was passed by Max early on, and then he tried to keep Kimi behind him, but couldn't. But then he put on a fresh set of tires, and he managed to pass Button and claim fifth. He said, Ricciardo said, you know, look, yeah, everybody just seemed to get a little quicker, and we just seemed to get slower. He struggled with his tires for most of the race. Verstappen, Verstappen did an incredible job to make a set of softs last 56 laps. And, of course, he benefited from the Mercedes collision on the last lap and claimed second. But, Paul, we are still talking about the plucky teen, a 19-year-old kid, being able to do tire management this well is very impressive.
It is. And, it's an interesting battle, inter-team battle here, nearly as interesting as the Mercedes pair, quite honestly, because Verstappen just handed Ricciardo
he did.
A lesson that, during this race. It was intriguing, you know. I mean, Ricciardo is an amazing driver, but he's got every bit to worry about with Max Verstappen alongside him. And it's intriguing to see it go. And Ricciardo has his moments too, obviously. He's still ahead in the points.
And he's always out qualifying Max.
Yeah, Max is definitely a spark there. He did an amazing job. I just saw Max's rise through the field. And when he got around Ricciardo, I was like, oof, that's got to hurt.
That's got to hurt. I know.
I mean, amazing job for Max Verstappen to make those tires last under it. Once again, intense pressure from a Ferrari from behind.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it wasn't just the Ferrari. Lewis was all over him. Nico was all over him. Yeah. I mean, he did a great job, you know. This is why everybody's talking about Max Verstappen, because they should be. This kid is truly amazing. And I agree with you. I think that, you know, we talked about the, oh, the Daniel Ricciardo Sebastian Vettel dust up. Woo, that was nothing. I think as time goes on, this Ricciardo Verstappen battle will be interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think Max is coming and hell's coming with him.
Yeah, Ricciardo may want to start talking to Ferrari again.
Before
his pay grade goes down a little bit.
I know. Speaking of Ferrari, Kimi Raikkonen finished P3. Sebastian Vettel at a DNF. Vettel's race weekend really went pear-shaped when his 29-lap-old Super Softs, his right rear exploded on lap 27 while he was leading. He was leading, folks, because he was a little out of sequence. So I don't want to overplay the fact that he was leading and the Pirelli blew up. That's not, you know, not really quite the case. But he didn't blame the team strategy for leaving him out too long, and he didn't quite say it was Pirelli's fault. Hint, hint, nod, nod, wink, wink. Your wife's a goer, you know, that sort of thing. She loved to take pictures. I'll bet she does. So anyway, not happy at all. Sebastian was not, and who can blame him? Kimi also ran a long first stint as well as Sebastian in hopes of undercutting Lewis, but pitted earlier than Seb, so he was passed by both the Red Bulls. Kimi managed to pass Ricciardo back, but couldn't mount an attack against Verstappen to get around him anyway. But did have heat on him, and he couldn't get him around him. Paul, you know, they walked into this weekend with a one token spend, upgraded engine. You know, this seems like a track. I don't know if it was the temperature. Had it been hotter, maybe Ferrari's performance may have been better. But gosh, it just, you know, team strat. I don't know. There's something missing here for Ferrari.
Yeah.
This should have been
not
a much
a lot
better
of progress.
Weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know what it is. Say every team seems to complain about the temperature not suiting their cars or on the tire right. And everything. Obviously, the tire is a major player in every race.
It's a huge player. Yeah.
It is. And they definitely seem to have stalled. It seemed like there was so much potential there on the Ferrari team. But right now, they're just kind of treading water, so to speak. Even Seb isn't able to do magical things. I don't know what happened with the Pirelli. No one else had that issue, so it could have been debris as much as anything else. It certainly wasn't a debacle like Silverstone a couple of years ago,
right,
where everyone started losing their tires. But it's obviously very upsetting for Vettel. And true enough, as Vettel said, it wasn't a super aggressive strategy that no one else was running. So, you know, it wasn't like they stayed 10 laps longer than anybody else on that tire.
Right.
So
right.
It wasn't necessarily a call from the team, but, you know, every team obviously has issues with tires. So maybe the degradation and the wear on the tire is a lot more on the Ferrari than anything else. Kimi had fresher tires than Verstappen, although he was technically on the same strategy as Verstappen. So his tires weren't exactly fresh as a daisy either. But I'm very surprised and disappointed that Kimi didn't mount a challenge on Verstappen. You know, he blamed it on the yellow flag on the last lap because that was where he was going to make his big move. Well, you know, he was close enough for a very long time,
right,
to get that done. Kimi's just I can't tell you what he could have done to get past Verstappen, but I think it should have happened. I don't, you know, it's hard to say. You know, it's very easy to blame aero imbalance, and it's a real thing. It's not a made up thing for sure, but that's definitely what Kimi seems to always go back to as to why he doesn't mount challenges. And
right.
You know, but as we've seen before from people like Max Verstappen, that there are possibilities there, and Kimi just doesn't seem to have that last little couple of percent that really makes that maneuver. Now on this short track, the truth is that even, you know, you come up to behind lap traffic. Traffic is an issue on such a short track.
Yeah.
That when you're actually chasing someone, they do get the benefit of being in DRS as well a lot of the times, and it's few and far between when you're the car behind and the car ahead doesn't actually have the ability of DRS.
Right.
So maybe that was where Kimi was struggling, where he could never get a couple of clean laps where Verstappen was, you know, held back by the fact that he couldn't open his DRS wing. I don't know. The Renault engine certainly seems to be stronger now that you can't just say, well, he was driving a Renault engine. It's easy to fly by that right now. I think the Renault engines make such big strides that even though it may not be as powerful, it's close enough.
Yeah, on this circuit at least.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But you know, double DRS, and you know, I am surprised that Kimi Kuhn. I'm disappointed that, as my kids say, you know, if you say I'm disappointed, that's way that hurts more than saying I'm angry. So I'm disappointed at Kimi for not being able to get around Verstappen there near the end.
So you're thinking,
not good enough, damn it, not good enough.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with Vettel out, it was Kimi's chance to make something.
I know he had Vettel over there. He wasn't happy either.
Yeah. He's a bit more talky on the podium there, isn't he?
Yeah. Kimi's,
it's interesting.
It's the kinder, gentler Kimi.
Yeah, I just don't know if he obviously knows his time is shorter in Formula One than it used to be, and he's trying to be a bit more, bit more
gregarious. Yeah,
something like that to attract another team. I don't know.
He was easier to understand than the interviewer.
No kidding. Why have a Spanish interviewer on an Austrian race? I don't get it.
Yeah, I think to speak English, which isn't her native.
There's a couple of Austrian drivers from the past that would have been a bit more apt to go up.
Yeah.
But I know Niki Lauda probably couldn't do it anymore because, you know, Niki?
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
What? Verts or somebody? I mean, but yeah, not a Spanish woman. I mean, I don't even. Did she even ask a question? Not really, no.
Just talk us through it, Paul. Okay. Well, it was great.
Isn't it great here in Austria?
Yeah, I know. It's just, it's crazy. McLaren, Jenson Button P6, Fernando Alonso, DNF. Button secured his best finish of the season and brings the team close to Toro Rosso in the points. Alonso suffered a battery pack failure. You could change those NICADs, man. Button said that there's simply no way that they can keep up with DRS. He goes, once DRS was open, we were toast. Mm-hmm. And the overall speed of that team is... I thought it was interesting. He said, you know what? In the whole grand scheme of things, we're about on par with Haas F1. That's where we are.
Yeah. And that's a progress, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. From the back of the grid, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great drive by Button. But, yeah, I think their lap speed was decent. But their
– trap speed.
Their ability to race and pass people is held back by the power of the Honda engine, right? They're on their own on a lap, they can do it, but there's ways of getting, if you're fast in the right points, you can get by someone that is maybe inherently the same speed as you, and that's exactly what they're fighting right now, is that on the straightaways, which is obviously where it's the easiest to pass, that's where they're lacking, and you know, a guy gets ahead of you, it's difficult to get by him in the middle of the corner. So that's the struggles of being a McLaren driver this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Speaking of Haas F1, you had Roman Grosjean on P7. Esteban Gutierrez in P11. Gutierrez, the Goot, Paul.
Oh, the Goot. Is that his new nickname? Nice.
Yeah, it's my nickname for him, the Goot. Right. The Goot was on a long first stint, but lost a lot of places at the start, and eventually he had to fight back from that. Finished just 0.6, 6-tenths out of the points, but he did lose a lot of spots at the very beginning and really was playing catch-up. Grosjean, for his part, also did a long stint, benefited from the safety car. He hadn't stopped yet when the safety car came out, so effectively he gets a free pit stop.
Yeah. Another good call by that Haas.
I'm telling you, their strategy worked great. His tires were working good. He even had a 5-second penalty for speeding the pit lane, but that don't confront him none. Bottom line is he ends up getting a free pit stop and gets up into seventh. Just for those of you keeping score at home, Romain Grosjean is the man who has scored all of the team points this year. So I just wanted to point that out. Not at the expense of the Goot. I'm just pointing it out. All right?
Yeah.
So there you have it. Want to talk about Toro Rosso, Paul?
I wanted to talk about Haas. You just spoke about Haas and then you're skipping them. I don't even get to talk about them.
I thought I covered it fairly comprehensively.
You did, sorry.
But apparently.
I was just trying to make a point to hold my station in the team here, you know. Put me down. I got to have my say whether it's got any reasoning behind it or point. I really matter.
You have to have a comment on Haas. No, anyway, go ahead. What did you think of Haas?
I no, it was a great job. Yeah, as you said, pretty much did say it. But great job by Roman to get the points. I think Esteban is actually doing a pretty good job. He just hasn't.
Of late, he has been, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty fast. He does a pretty good job. Just hasn't had much luck in scoring the points.
Yes.
Move on.
Move on. Toro Rosso, Carlos Sainz, P8. That'd be Carlos Sainz Jr. for those of you still confused who his dad and he is. It's P8. Daniel Kvyat, DNF. Sainz was one of the very first drivers to stop, and he fell way down in the order, down to 17th. Now, I don't want to overplay this, but being down in 17th after that first stop and fighting back to P8, it's not a bad job. And I thought he had a pretty good day, all things considering, compared to his teammate, Daniel Kvyat, who started from the pit lane and then retired with a mechanical issue on the opening lap, prompting him to say, why is this always happening to me?
Oh, did you lose your button?
Oh, yeah. Where is my button? Wait.
Man, I was waiting for that.
I don't know. I guess my button... Much to my chagrin, everybody's
broken too. Yeah, DNF'd as well.
Yeah, everyone's gonna rejoice though. Thank God he's got his audio stopped. Everybody's like, "Yay!"
They all rejoiced. But why is it always happening to Daniel? What not a good weekend for him at all. But Carlos Sainz once again scoring points, man.
I know.
Doing a great job.
Yeah, he did a great job on that. All right, let's talk about Williams F1.
Ooh, this is going to be quick.
This is going to be quick, I know. Here's a team that was on the front row a couple of years ago, this circuit, doing very well at Austria, and my, what a year or two difference makes. Williams, Felipe Massa, DNF, Valtteri Bottas, P9. Massa started from the pit lane after changing a front wing. They had to go to an older spec front wing. They had an issue with his wing, and he fought to the top 10-ish before suffering from brake issues and then retired. Bottas had a quiet race, basically, and also had to defend his position against, wait for it, Pascal Wehrlein. That's right, who was all over the Finn. Anyway, this is a team, like I said, who was on the front row 2 years ago. Interestingly enough, because of all of the changing weather conditions, the rain, the dry, the cool, the hot, it was just back and forth. At the top of this podcast, I talked about the teams and how tactically it was an incredibly challenging weekend to get on top of. And what ends up happening come race day, which they really didn't see in Friday, Saturday, was the serious brake issues that started to crop up. We get to Force India, we'll talk about that, but certainly that's what happened to Massa, that's what happened to Nico Rosberg. As it turns out, this is a really punishing circuit on brakes, Paul.
Yeah, no, I heard that, and I'm quite surprised, really. Certainly, we know it's a high-speed circuit, but there's only a couple of really tight turns, so I'm quite surprised at the brake wear issues, but perhaps it's, you know, they all have brake packages for certain circuits, and maybe not everyone got their sums right, you know, coming here and what package they wanted to run. But it certainly was consistent throughout the field that everyone was marginal on brakes. Mm-hmm. They do say that, or as I did, I heard on the television that, was it turn one is the highest brake pressure or of all the circuits in the season, which is once again very, very surprising. But
it's interesting because, you know, it's uphill, right?
Well, the second one is.
Or second one, yeah. That's right. I was thinking because up, that's right. I'm confused. Of course,
and that would make sense. But you know, you got to think. Yeah. I guess Coda is just a little different because it does have that big uphill, but as we know, there's that little rise right at the end of the brake zone, which doesn't allow you to really utilize the hill as much as you could on the braking. So,
right.
It's surprising, but I guess that the truth is the truth. So, marginal brakes. The Williams team, not competitive at all, as you said. They were high and mighty there a couple of years ago and maybe threw away the possibility of a win. Luckily for them, Silverstone is next week. But if they struggle at Silverstone, I'm wondering if, with the resurgence of the Force India team, which unfortunately didn't get a result, but were competitive here, may have a shot at that fourth spot if Williams is floundering here. That wasn't pretty at all.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a pretty weekend for them at all. I was talking about Manor. Pascal Wehrlein finishes in P10. How about that?
Yeah,
yay! I've always
Big fan of that team.
Absolutely. You were always, I mean, from the day one, you were a Manor fan. Oh, I'm sorry. That was Caterham you were the fan of. I was the Manor fan. That's right. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pascal Wehrlein, P10, Rio, Haranto, P16. Pascal started 12th, ran an aggressive strategy. Paul, it was interesting. He had two sets of ultra stop. He ran ultra, ultra soft, I believe it was, and pitted just before the safety car, and that left him last. Then he had to fight back all the way through the field with some great passing that none of us got to see, and then inherited 10th when Sergio Perez's DNF on the last lap. So, okay, but fair enough. Even if Sergio would have stayed in, it was a P11 for a Manor, folks. It was a fantastic weekend, Paul.
And he was biting at the heels of Bodas. So, I mean, it wasn't like he was out there and didn't have a chance. He really did have a chance of getting the points. He was closing in on Bodas, even though he had older tires. I saw that he was in last place, and I thought, wow, you've really done it this time. But I like the strategy call, because if you're that team, why not do something different? You know, go for it. The qualifying position was fantastic, and Pascal, you know, had that pace in the race as well, which was fantastic to see. And yeah, without the pace car, he may have been, you know, in the points clear and good at that point. But yeah, he had to fight back into him. So incredible race for him and the team.
Yeah, and you got to think, you know, Dave Ryan's over there thinking, okay, look, we qualified this well, but how do we stay there? You know, how do we do that? And so they said, let's start on the ultras. Let's do an ultra back to back, and let's see if we can't just keep them somewhere in the midfield to give us a shot at it. And it worked.
It did.
It was a great job. Let's talk about Renault Sport F1. Julian Palmer, P12. Kevin Magnussen, the K-Mags, finished P14. He had a penalty for weaving against the young Pascal Wehrlein, trying to prevent him to pass.
He's all over this place, that Pascal Wehrlein guy.
I know.
Everyone's business.
Yeah. I know. He's up everybody's tailpipe, man. And he got a five-second penalty for moving too many times, trying to block the line. But that puts him down to P14. Palmer bested his teammate with a decent battle midfield, claims 12th. Both of the drivers struggled on the restart, really, and I think that kind of hurt them. Whether they would have been higher in the grid, in the finishing order, I'm not quite sure, but they did suffer. They had that restart, and all the cars around them were on fresher tires. And so they were sort of off sequence there with a little more dogged tires, and so that hurt them. But P12, P14, you know, with a P12 finish, I couldn't help but, you know, notice Julian Palmer, you know, walking around the paddock like he had podiumed.
Puffing his chest out.
Yeah. That's how it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
My seat is safe.
Yeah.
Not really.
Not really. But anything to add to Renault, Paul?
Not really. They're not doing anything. They're just treading water.
It's going to be a long rest of the season for this team.
In a long day.
Yeah, it's going to be long. Speaking of long season, Salvador, Marcus Ericsson, P15, Felipe Nasser, P13. Nasser had a nice drive, making a one-stopper work.
Two in a row, man.
I know. He had a one-stopper, made that work for him. Ericsson couldn't get his tires to work well and failed to get around the Renaults. Enjoy that, Paul. It's rare.
It's a trend at this point. Doing
it's a trend.
Is a trend.
Some talk about Sauber has now got a financial backer. Care to share any insider info you might have, Paul?
No, I haven't. I haven't delved into that one yet. But I perhaps they're pretty busy right now with all these races in a row. So I'm going to have to wait till after the flurry of races to get my insider information from Gray Squirrel. But that's good to know. I'd rather them have a sponsor than an investor, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Maybe they that all comes clearer in the future. But yeah, there was talk of actual change of ownership. So does that mean Peter's going to be out again? I don't know. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't want him to go away, so to speak, but I guess all things do change. But the good thing is people are getting paid. The team's going to make it through the rest of the season. And that's definitely a first step.
Maybe it'll just switch from Sauber to Team Manisha. You know, stranger things have happened, you know.
Yeah.
We almost had Zoran
Super Gini. Super Manisha Team.
Yes, yeah, Super Aguri. Yeah, Super Manisha. I like
it. She wears
it.
A cape in the pit lane.
She wears a dental lab jacket. And there you go. Yeah, I like that. That's good. Let's talk about Force India. And because of Force India's issues, Paul, that's led the press today to basically engage in... Paul, you're English. You're a big Queen fan?
I am a big Queen fan, bet. That was maybe their best. But, the Queen.
How can you not be a Freddie fan, a Brian May fan? You know?
I don't know. It was fantastic. Fantastic.
Great stuff.
I'm just disappointed with the change of lead singer at this point.
Yeah. So, let's talk about Force India. Sergio Perez was running the top 10. He had a brake issue. Which caused him to straight line right off the corner in and hit the barrier walls. Pretty good wallop, as a matter of fact, on the very last lap. He had a brake issue. The press, perhaps rightfully so, and even Bob Vernley at Force India said, look, his brakes were in critical failure point, and we can't tell him because of the radio ban. And, it brings up a good point, Paul. If you know, are we banning for coaching, or are we banning for safety? You know,
I mean,
you're starting to catch safety calls inside of the guise of trying to prevent coaching, and maybe that isn't good. Certainly, if you can't tell a driver that he's almost near brake failure, I don't know. Is that right?
I think you should be able to tell them that. If you've got the information. I was always against the coaching, but not against certain parameters of the car, because the cars are complicated. I'd rather the cars be less complicated, as we spoke about before, where there's a lot less adjustments that a driver can even make in a car, and everything needs to be kind of preset beforehand, just be able to change your bias, etc. Definitely if your brakes are that far gone where it is a safety concern, then I think you should be allowed to say something about it.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. He drops out of the top 10. Hülkenberg started second and then went all downhill from there as he dropped backwards.
Didn't he?
Oh, my gosh, like a stone.
Oh, that was a shame. And, you know, he's all smiles in the qualifying. You know, it was great for him. But, wow, that car couldn't have gone backwards faster.
My gosh, it was crazy. It was nuts. He goes backwards like a stone, and eventually... Mm-hmm. Completely off the back and out of the race due to a bad vibrations. I don't know. I've read a couple things. He was saying that he had this real bad vibration, and then I think I read somewhere that may have been brake issues too. So not quite sure. He had Hülkenberg had a lot of graining too, and the safety car really kind of ruined his strategy as well. So just a bad weekend all the way around for Force India. It's unfortunate having started from the front row.
And it's unfortunate, obviously, with Williams' woes, that they couldn't reap the rewards on that one, especially from where they started. And Perez was obviously in a good position. Nico Hülkenberg should have been in a really good position, but neither scored points, so they weren't able to gain. A good opportunity lost there, I think, by the Force India group.
And you got to think, if you're big bad Bob Vernley, you're thinking, we have points on the table here. You know,
we could
have closed that gap to Williams. And it was just, you know, you had Sergio on the top 10, Hülkenberg starting on the front row. You had to think, I got both cars in the top 10. I'm not, you know, whether we podium or not, I don't know. But both cars in the top 10 here you had to be thinking that.
Should have been. As I said, you know, with this track, if you're off a little bit, you're off a mile. And that's ultimately what happened with the Hülkenberg car, you know, getting the head around the graining and everything. With the massive changes in temperature and weather, I think that probably called them out. They missed something there, the cold temperature on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's how they all finish. That's what we think about how they finish. But we always hand out a few awards at the end of the Race Review podcast. And the first award is Pass of the Race.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, Paul, my pass of the race, I think that should be like his theme music. It's just awesome. You know, you can see him ducking and diving. And
it should. We need visuals at this point, right?
I know. Because I was looking at, I was listening to the music, and I'm thinking, oh, man, that is perfect passing, you know, racing music for highlights for Lewis Hamilton. This is awesome.
Yep.
That'd be perfect. So anyway, yeah, my pass of the race is Lewis on Max Verstappen. The plucky teen could have scuttled Lewis's entire race. And it was critical that Lewis got around him, and he did, and did so handily. I thought it was a great pass, and it was essential to Lewis's win.
It really was, yeah, because Nico was making hay right there with that gap, and surprisingly wasn't. And as we know now, there was a reason why he wasn't making more of a gap. But yeah, one a couple more corners, and Lewis would behind Max Verstappen, and Lewis would never have had the opportunity there in turn two. So that was a critical pass. I'm going to give it to Lewis on Nico in turn two, because no matter whatever, it was a great comeback. And it was a great run up the hill without DRS, thank goodness. So we can completely discount DRS in the passing maneuver on the outside, forcing Nico to do something different that didn't quite pull off. So I think I'm giving it to Lewis on that maneuver.
Good choice. I like it. All right. Well, the next award is Donkey of the Race. All right, Paul, it's going to surprise you a little bit because everybody knows, you know, I'm not, you know, I do have a favorite team and everybody knows what it is. But, you know, just to show you, I'm unbiased. I'm giving pass of the race or a donkey of the race to Ferrari. Ooh. That's who I'm giving it to. I know. And everybody's
for
like,
drivers
what?
Or
Todd?
For...
No, just as a team. Everybody's saying, Todd, what? You're a big Ferrari fan. You're a sycophant. What do you? Well, look, folks, I am capable of being completely unbiased here. You accuse me all you want. You know, you're a Lewis hater. Really? Okay. You love Nico. Really? All right, whatever. So here's the thing. Ferrari spent a token coming in this weekend. They've got to get something going. I mean, you know, all the talk at the beginning of the season is how much they've closed the gap. Now, is there still a delta to Mercedes? Clearly. But they, you know, there's a few races here where they could have picked off a win, you know? And this weekend to come and run him 27 laps. The reason I say 29, I'm piggybacking Will Buxton on NBC on this because he said there was actually two laps on those tires because they were a use set. So he ran 27 laps and there was already two laps on him, total of 29. I don't know. That's wheel math. But the bottom line is, this should have been a weekend that they capitalized. And to your point, Paul, even with Seb out, that Kimi couldn't mount a real challenge to the Red Bull is just depressing. And, not a good weekend for this team. I was torn, this or Williams, but you know, Williams has been a little off song this season anyway, and I feel like Ferrari should be thereabouts. So that's who I'm giving it to.
All right. Well, I'm going to beat a man while he's down.
You're giving it to Nico.
I'm giving it to Nico.
Yeah, I was going to too, but I knew you would.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Making my life easy. That's an easy one, right?
But I feel like, you know, I'm an armchair fan, you know, criticizing his driving skills. You're a professional driver, so I give you honors.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. So obviously we've beaten this one to death.
Yeah.
So come on, little trooper, get on with the program.
Buck up, little camper. Oh boy. All right. Well, that actually means that we have one award left, and that award is Drive of the Race. Okay, Paul, you're going with Nico, aren't you?
Nico Hülkenberg. I'm torn here. It's a really close one. I might have to adjust mine depending on who you're picking, but I'm going to pick Max Verstappen at this point.
Nice.
You know, just as I said, you know, especially under fire on Friday and you know, he crashed a couple of times and bringing it back in and then just doing a phenomenal job. And as I said, maybe a lackluster attempts by Kimi Raikkonen, but not easy to hold him back for that number of laps. And I didn't expect it. I really thought Kimi was going to easily get by him, but Max, obviously the focus ended up being on the Mercedes at the end. So we didn't really see what was going on back there, but he managed to hold him off those last three laps, which is an incredible feat, I thought, by Max.
Right. You know, had Nico executed the attempted pass on turn two and kept Lewis behind him, I would have given Nico the drive because I think it was a great drive up until that point.
Yeah.
But having said that, he cocked that up. I'm giving it to Pascal because I think scoring Beautiful. The first point since Monaco, since the late Jules Bianchi, I think that was a fabulous drive. And he did it on merit. You know, I mean, I know he inherited 10th because of Perez, but still, you got to be there to inherit 10th, and he was. And it was a great drive, and the team needed it. And it was a great deal all along. I almost, Paul, for the donkey, I almost picked the crowd because I – Absolutely hate the booing. That was pathetic. And I hated it when they did it to Nico 2 years ago at Spa and all that. I was apoplectic over the crowd doing that to Nico back then, and I'm the same for Lewis this year. Lewis didn't deserve that. He didn't do anything wrong. And for that crowd to be booing him is just not good. It's not good at all.
That was not very nice at all. And completely wrong. So
and completely wrong. Yeah, they need to loosen their lederhosen over there in Austria a little bit. That was just wrong. Yeah. So anyway, well, that's what we think of the race that was the Austrian Grand Prix. Paul, it's always awesome to have you on and unpack a race. And to my great pleasure, we get to do it again next week.
That's right. Then the British Grand Prix is coming.
That's right. And you're British, Paul. This ought to be exciting.
Oddly enough, I am. Yes. That's exciting. So.
It is.
Wish I was there. I haven't been to a British Grand Prix in a long time.
And you can't blame Paul. He didn't vote to stay or leave in the Brexit.
I didn't. No, I didn't.
So you don't know where he's at on that deal. Oh, so you can't blame him.
I could have voted. I didn't know. I should have. Right?
You should have. Yeah. Who knew? Yeah. So, you know, there's a prime minister position open. You might throw your hat, name in the hat.
May as well. I'm going to change it all up, man.
Yeah.
Change
it all up.
I have no credentials, but that's never stopped anybody.
All right. Well, hey, until next week, we come back and review the British Grand Prix. Be sure to stop at the website, Formula1blog.com, Formula, the word, number one, blog.com. Share your opinion. Just do it with decorum and civility. If you like this podcast at the low, low price of $0, give us a good rating over on iTunes. Appreciate that. If you don't like the podcast, then stop listening to the damn thing, all right? You know, don't listen to every podcast and then go and say, oh, I hate it. Well, stop it. Go listen to something else for crying out loud. Also, if you like it, share it, spread it around. Big thank you to the donations this week. And folks, we are not monetized, so it is a huge help when you do so. So thank you very much for that. Go over to the forum, hang out with Dave and Tom and all the folks over there, start your own discussions. And then Monday nights, 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, hashtag F1 chat. Tom and Lauren do a fabulous job of running that on Twitter for us. Make sure you do that. And Tom is a delightful guy. And you might be hearing some more from Tom and Doug, our own IndyCar guy, Professor Patterson. They may be ramping up a little more IndyCar-centric podcast for us. So, I'm excited about that. So keep your ears open for that. Doug and Tom are great friends and great members of FBC. And I think you'll enjoy that as well. So stay tuned to that. And then, until next week when we do this all over again, this is Todd, a.k.a. Negative Camber, saying so long.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Brilliant. 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 Great job, guys. Great job.
Well done, Wes. Well done.
Excellent work. Fantastic. Very well.
Brilliant, guys. Great job.
I just love winning. just love racing it.
Well, yeah, and as all of my notes always say at the bottom, please consider whether you really need to print these out.
Yeah, and I do.
Well, I'm like Williams. This is my social responsibility, man.